This is the Breaker.News podcast. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast for the week of August 2nd, 2026. Welcome to edition number 459 and happy British Columbia Day weekend. Soccer executives from around the world gave FIFA boss Gianni Infantino and a relative of Donald Trump a yellow card for their proposal to turn the World Cup into a company and sell shares to investors. But Infantino gave up on July 31st. What was it all about and why such a fuss? On July 30th, I interviewed one of the world's top sports economics professors, Victor Matheson. He is my guest on this edition of the podcast. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. Gianni Infantino marked the week since the FIFA World Cup final with an Instagram rant that was directed at the critics and the haters, but to him, they're one and the same. After the victory lap of FIFA's biggest, most profitable World Cup in history, FIFA wants more profits. But not everyone agrees with Gianni Infantino's roadmap. Europe's soccer governing body is opposed. What does this mean for the cities that hosted the World Cup in 2026 across North America and might have a chance to host in a future World Cup if it does come back, perhaps as soon as 2038? Joining me to talk about this is Professor Victor Matheson, a sports economist at the College of the Holy Cross in Worcester, Massachusetts. Victor, thanks for returning to the Breaker.News podcast. You actually went to the World Cup. You went to see this grand tournament as a fan. How was your experience and how much did it cost you to attend?
So it was expensive, but it was fantastic. So I went to see Scotland, Morocco in Boston. The rest of my family went to see Iraq, Norway, got to see the majestic Erling Haaland score his first World Cup goals. I also then went out to Kansas City to see Algeria versus Austria, a game that had no business being an entertaining game that turned out to be spectacularly good. So, and quite honestly, this is the problem, right, is that the World Cup really is great. This was as good a tournament as you could possibly hope. The soccer up and down the line was excellent. Out of 104 total matches, I would say 70 or 80 of them were really, really good. Unfortunately, one of the terrible ones was the final, but, you know, that happens every once in a while. We had a third place game that may be the best World Cup game ever played. It really was a great tournament. Some things that we were worried about did not come to pass. Number one, we were worried about there being empty stadiums, at least in part because of the super high ticket prices. I will say I myself, I got in early. I had a lottery ticket to get, tickets before the teams were announced. Those tickets cost me between $300 and $400 a piece. That's roughly, even after inflation, that's roughly four times what I paid for World Cup tickets back in 1994. So, I paid $50 a ticket back then, about $100 in today's dollars back then. And again, $300 to $400 for similar tickets today. So super expensive. So we were worried about empty stadiums that mostly didn't come to pass. And for all that we hate FIFA, and they're hateable for a bunch of reasons, but one of them probably isn't. They sold their product for what people are willing to pay for it. We wouldn't expect a person taking a job to say, hey, you know, I know they're offering me $100,000, but I should really only take $30, even though someone's offering me $100. We wouldn't say people should do that, and it's not obvious FIFA should do that either. So the ticket prices still led to full stadiums, which was great, and stadiums full of passionate crowds. You know, it wasn't just rich people on their Instagram accounts at these events. The other thing we were worried about is moving to 48 teams, winding up with a bunch of blowout games. There were a handful of teams that came in and weren't great, but you know, for the most part, we had excellent games. Even a little tiny Curacao ended up tying one of their matches. Cape Verde was one of the stories of the tournament, taking both Spain and Argentina into a full 90 minutes tied. So that's great. So a couple of those things that we were worried about didn't come to pass. And the other thing is, mercifully, at least here in the United States, Trump pretty much stayed out of this tournament. Obviously, he got involved with that one red card with Flo Balogun. We might remember that. But, you know, the worries that we would have, you know, ICE and troops at all of the stadiums did not come to pass. You know, most people had no problems getting in. Obviously, some issues early. But pretty much this tournament, once the tournament actually got underway, was pretty great and pretty fun. You know, very few incidents of violence, very few problems with crowd control and things like that across at least the United States, a little bit in Mexico. You know, so really, really a great tournament in lots of ways. Doesn't mean it was a profitable tournament for the host cities, but it was certainly a fun tournament. And again, some of the big worries disappeared. Other worries that we'll talk about in a second, I'm sure we're still there, but you know, this was a wonderful tournament from a purely sports standpoint.
And from a business standpoint, FIFA couldn't be happier. And now Gianni Infantino is proposing the FIFA Forward Enterprise. Basically, what it looks like to me is to create a company to package broadcast, sponsorship, ticketing, and licensing rights all together, and then sell shares to investors. And in this case, it's with the help of one of Donald Trump's relatives. Is it that simple?
Actually, I think it really is that simple. It's basically saying, look, we're gonna take a look at the total revenues that FIFA can generate from their big events. We're gonna sell this off to whatever type of investors you have. Again, I'm not wild that Kushner is part of this deal. That being said, I think this is a bad deal, no matter who is in this. And the issue is basically this. Basically, when you sell off pieces of a company to private investors, basically you're selling all of the future earnings of your company in order to get money today. Sometimes that sort of stuff makes sense. Like if you know that you need some sort of big capital investment and the fact that you don't, for example, have a stadium, for example, in Cape Verde, and that's what's holding back your national team program, and you don't have a way to raise the capital, this is a great way to raise capital, right? And this has been a feature of capitalism forever across all sorts of industries. The problem here is, first of all, you're putting a bunch of money in the hands of today, the people who are running FIFA and the individual national federations today. There is no reason to think that those folks can better use funds than future generations of FIFA and National Soccer Association executives. This is all done because the people today basically want to take money away from the people of the future and use that themselves. That makes sense if you're Infantino. He's not going to be around in 2060. And so he really doesn't care whether FIFA makes a dime in 2060. If he could, he would probably sell every single dollar that FIFA's ever going to generate in order to have all of that money today. And so the question is, do we want to commit the entire future of world soccer to today's people who have clear biases and clear reasons to take the money today? And I've seen no plans either from FIFA or any of the other individual federations of why do I need money now versus why am I not satisfied just receiving money in perpetuity from the World Cup as it goes through. I could be convinced if someone says, look, we are capital constrained and this is why getting money now is extremely important and we should be willing to sacrifice the future of soccer because of something we need today. I've never heard that from a single, convincingly, from a single federation anywhere. I suspect it's people today want to put money in their pockets today rather than have that money available for people in the future.
But why the resistance today? Is it as simple as the Trump connection, that this is the brother of Jared Kushner?
First of all, that might be one of them. Although my understanding of this particular Kushner is not particularly close ally with Trump in any way. That being said, the big pushback is coming from Europe. And I think Europe's issue here is that This new organization, the way FIFA would be organized here, could put the European Association in significant trouble. And the reason is this, is that if all of a sudden you bring in investors who might be putting $20 billion into FIFA, they want some control over that, and they want to maximize then the amount of money that FIFA makes. The obvious way to increase money from FIFA is to have FIFA tournaments more commonly. So instead of having a World Cup every 4 years, have it every 2 years. That sounds pretty good, but that would be a disaster for Europe. And the reason that would be a disaster for Europe and UEFA is because UEFA already has their own big tournament every 4 years on the opposite years of the World Cup. And a World Cup every 2 years would almost certainly mean the death of the Euro Cup, which is wildly profitable for the Europeans. And of course, you know, the problem here with FIFA in general, with respect to the Europeans, is the Europeans generate a huge amount of the skill and the money, but the money that FIFA brings in is shared among all of the different countries, right? So, you know, Curaçao, with essentially no money, little soccer, enough to make it to the World Cup and score a couple goals, right? But not a soccer power, has as much political power within FIFA as England does, as Germany does, as Spain does, right? And of course, Curaçao votes with the idea of, hey, if we bring in $200 million, that should be shared evenly among 200 different federations. And so Curaçao gets a million of that 200 million, same amount as England, same amount as Germany, right? Because they have 1/200th of the political power, and they can more easily vote themselves 1/200th of the money. But of course, it's Europe that's making all of the money for the World Cup because they've got the big countries in there, right? Six of the eight quarterfinalists, seven of the eight quarterfinalists were European countries, right? Obviously not Argentina, maybe not Morocco. Do I have that right? So you're talking about, you know, most of the money generating teams are from Europe. And so Europe has little interest in a FIFA that takes over the European competitions and takes over all the revenue streams and distributes that then for political power to the Curaçaos and the Cape Verdes of the world.
Well, you do have UEFA, which has a substantial number of members, I think more than 50 at least, but you do have others around the world. You've got the African nations, you've got the Middle East, you've got Asia. Do you think that Infantino can ram this through with support elsewhere? Could he win this war of words? Or could this backfire on him, and could this be the beginning of the end of his presidency?
So that's a good question. I think Infantino is very politically savvy. That being said, it is easy to buy votes among the minnows versus the United States, the Canadas, and the Germanys of the world, right? When you are looking at generating $10 to $13 billion from this World Cup, it is easy to throw not that much money at a Curaçao, at a Trinidad and Tobago, right, at a St. Kitts and Nevis, and have that buy a lot of political power for you. So the way that FIFA is organized is, you know, it's much more like the Senate in the United States, right? You have little tiny minnows and gigantic countries, yeah, having kind of equal votes, like, you know, a Wyoming and a California. And so the fact is that money can buy a whole lot of political power there, and you don't have to throw a ton of money at the small countries to really get a lot of political power in those places. So historically we know that, FIFA's had corruption issues. There wasn't much corruption in places like the United States, in part because it's just too much money in the United States, too hard to bribe the United States officials. One of the hotbeds of corruption was little tiny Trinidad and Tobago, right? And again, because a little corruption money goes a long way in those sort of things. And even if it's not a straight out corruption, just saying, look, vote for me because I will give you, you know, Djibouti. I will give you Vanuatu. I will give you Solomon Islands, the money you need to be able to compete on the world stage. And you don't have to throw a lot there for that to be a gigantic increase in the budgets of those sort of countries. So, you know, I think the votes can be bought. The counter side of this is, can UEFA convincingly tell the rest of the world, say, look, you need us to have a World Cup that works, a World Cup that does not include, you know, Europe, which includes what maybe 15, 12, 13 of the 20 World Cup champions of the, 25 World Cup champions that we've had in history. It's not much of a World Cup. And say, look, we really will drop out of here. And guess what? On top of that, if Europe isn't part of the World Cup, Europe will have no interest in forcing its professional clubs to release its players. So a World Cup without any of the European nations and a World Cup without any of the players from other countries that play in Europe participating is not an appealing tournament at all. And so if Europe can say, look, we think this is not in the best interest of anyone, and we will sabotage this tournament if you go this direction, that should carry a lot of weight.
Now, a bit of a sleeper story that's been overshadowed is Jimmy Raskin. He's a Democrat congressman from Maryland. He's a member of the House Judiciary Committee. He's actually launched an investigation into FIFA and its connections with Donald Trump. Multiple conflicts of interests that have been out there in public view, such as FIFA renting space in the Trump Tower and holding events in the Trump Tower. Jimmy Raskin, Congressman Raskin, says that Trump, quote, allowed FIFA to operate as a multinational criminal enterprise with impunity, end quote. And he wants Infantino to testify. Do you think that he can succeed? Can Raskin succeed?
I think that's an interesting question here. The crazy thing is, of all the corrupt things that FIFA's done and Trump has done with the relationship to FIFA, this has got to be not even the top 100 corruption issues related to Trump. But it might be one that captures the attention of people in an important way. Obviously, you know, this in some ways would have been better time before the World Cup, where we have a little bit more leverage. You know, I think at least for the short term, FIFA's gotten what they want out of the United States, a wildly successful and wildly lucrative tournament. You know, I don't know if I'm Infantino, if I even decide to show up for that sort of hearing. You know, I don't think Raskin has any actual legal power to compel him to come to the United States and testify regarding this. So that'll be an interesting thing to talk about. I should point out one other thing when we're talking about the selling off, though, of this of the FIFA's money. The other thing that's super important for your listeners to understand is FIFA is actually not a business. It's a charity, right? And it's a nonprofit. And it's a charity that's in the business of promoting world soccer. And I think Infantino has been pretty cagey about, or pretty clever about this, not cagey, actually, clever about this. And he said, look, I know that we're making a ton of money here, and I know we're charging people $500 a ticket, but guess what? You can feel good about paying that $500 to go see a game in Toronto, to go see a game in Vancouver, go see a games in the U.S., because we're going to take that money, and we're going to take most of it, and we're going to give it back to grassroots soccer in 200 nations across the world. And you're sure you're paying $400, but that means soccer fields for kids in Cameroon. It means soccer balls for kids in Haiti. It means uniforms for kids in India who wouldn't have it otherwise. It means training of referees and coaches across all different sorts of countries. And quite honestly, he's not wrong about that. Obviously, there's a bunch of money skimmed off by the executives and, you know, making big money. That being said, a lot of that money really does end up exactly where it should end up. I mean, I've refereed on fields here in the United States that have been paid for with 1994 World Cup money. So we know this happens and it exists. And Infantino, as of the way things stand now, can make a real argument that, yes, we're making a ton of money, but it is a means to an end. And the end is soccer for all, for everyone. But if we have now private investors here putting in $20 billion, they want a return on that money. And so those investors, and as much as FIFA says, well, you know, they're going to be silent partners. We're still going to be running things the way they are. There's no way a person putting $20 billion in is going to be a silent partner here, right? They're going to control a lot of what FIFA does, and they're going to put pressure on FIFA to do things to maximize revenue. And so it's no longer that the money is a means to an end. The money is the end in of itself. So FIFA becomes an organization where that its goal is to make as much money as possible from big events, which is not a bad thing, okay? We love the Super Bowl, we love the Grey Cup, right? We love NBA Finals, we love all these things. We love the Stanley Cup, we love the World Cup, but that's not what FIFA is supposed to stand for now. FIFA is supposed to be about promoting the game, and by including this for-profit element in here, that fundamentally changes what FIFA does. And you could imagine these investors saying, look, I know you wanted to send a bunch of money to Panama for coaching training and soccer balls, but you can still send that money to Panama, but it needs to go into advertising the World Cup, right? And that's not a thing I think any soccer fan wants their money going to. I think we all love grassroots soccer and would love to see money, an organization like FIFA, providing the opportunity for everyone in the world to play. I don't know that we're so happy about a nonprofit not paying taxes when the only thing they're trying to do is generate the most money for private investors. I think that fundamentally changes what FIFA is. And we can't trust FIFA then to be some sort of benevolent guardian of the game. It's now whatever maximizes money for the investors.
And the longer that this goes on, the longer politicians like Jamie Raskin will have questions, the more that taxpayers will have questions about how much we paid to subsidize FIFA to put FIFA in this position where it is making a giant amount of money, but it wants to make a humongous amount of money, that we're spectators to this spectacle that is unfolding before our eyes. That the question might be that if FIFA is going to get even bigger from a financial standpoint, shouldn't it be paying the full bill whenever it goes and wherever it goes and stages a tournament, instead of relying on local taxpayers to be paying for the policing and emergency services and the sanitation?
So at least one thing that Infantino has to fall back on now is, yeah, we could pay these things, but that means less soccer balls available for that poor kid growing up in Cameroon. And do you as Canadians really want to rip that soccer ball out of this poor kid's hands? That's a reasonable argument. I don't think it's a correct one, but you can at least see that tugs at the heartstrings a little bit. At this point, though, as soon as you fully privatize, it's, do you really want us to pay the full bill? Don't you realize that this takes away? Do you really want to be responsible for ripping those $100 bills out of the hands of this poor investment banker in New York or in Dubai? That's really what that becomes. And of course, it's even less justifiable when the money that you're redirecting is being redirected, out of billionaires' hands rather than being redirected out of grassroots soccer programs in South Asia.
And you're wearing your Whitecaps jersey.
I do have a Whitecaps jersey on. They're kind of the talk of MLS right now, in a bad way. One of the earlier franchises here, but looking for a more profitable home, whether that is in Vancouver or elsewhere? That's the question.
The pushback that Vancouver has had to Don Garber and Major League Soccer may have had an impact, especially after what we saw with the 7 World Cup matches at BC Place Stadium, mostly full BC Place Stadium. The hotels weren't mostly full, but the stadium was mostly full. It looked great on TV, and I know Don Garber was there at one of the matches because I saw him enter the stadium. There doesn't seem to be that urgency now after the World Cup as there was before the World Cup. There was what looks like a bit of a trial balloon that BC Place Stadium might have been for sale to the Whitecaps or Lions, but the government has said, no, that's not going to happen. So we're kind of waiting and wondering what is next in this saga. What will happen next in this saga? You know, the Whitecaps have at least one more year at BC Place.
Yeah, so, well, I mean, first of all, it looks like, the Canadians are turning out in big numbers to try to support that team, right? So first game back after the World Cup, I think we're going to see well over 30,000 fans in there for the Whitecaps. So obviously the most direct way that if you're a fan, you save your local team is show up. And right. And of course, from an economic standpoint, there's no reason necessarily that the city should bail out this team. Of course, there's no obvious reason why a person who owns the team shouldn't be able to take a team that and make the most money they can from their investment. That being said, it could be very disappointing times coming up for the Whitecaps. So again, going out and supporting the team is the best way to maintain that team. Of course, the big issue here is 15 years ago, MLS team expansion teams are going for, you know, $10 to $20 million, right? And so if you want to sell off a team, you get tired of running it or you want to change directions, you can't get much money for it. So there's not a whole lot of incentive for that ownership group to bail out, given the fact that they can't get much on their investment. Of course, nowadays, new MLS franchises selling in the hundreds of millions of dollars. So all of a sudden, you're sitting on a pretty expensive asset that you may wish to cash in on, right? And yeah, that ownership group is worth in the billions, but the Whitecaps at their current valuation, especially if you can move them elsewhere, that's a big portion of that ownership group's total assets, and so you can understand why it. What was an easy decision to stay put a decade ago is a much more tempting decision to bail out and cash in your profits.
Why wouldn't they want to sell them an expansion franchise at, say, $500 million instead of allow them just to buy into an existing franchise where the revenue that would then go to the rest of the owners around the league would be much less than a share in an expansion franchise fee?
Right. So that's maybe exactly the thing that saves soccer in Vancouver, right, is very specifically not allowing the ownership of the Breakers to sell a franchise to a particularly appealing location elsewhere that Major League Soccer already has their eye on. Literally this has happened before. For example, the San Francisco Giants in Major League Baseball, they stayed in San Francisco. Rather, they had one foot out the door to Tampa. Can you imagine that, thinking you could make more money in Tampa in baseball than in San Francisco? But, yeah, they had one foot out the door to Tampa, and Major League Baseball blocked that move. They kind of made up some stuff about the ownership group in Tampa to block that move. But really it was because they wanted to sell their own expansion franchise there. And they had already started down that path of selling an expansion franchise, and they didn't want to lose the opportunity to sell the franchise rather than have one move in instead. So quite honestly, that level of financial interest of the rest of the owners in the league may very well be what keeps, I think it's very likely to keep Vancouver from moving to Vegas. It may not stop them from moving to, I don't know, Sacramento or somewhere else. But I think if you're looking at one particular, kind of the most valued potential franchise location would be Vegas. And that very well might be what keeps Vancouver where it is, just for that exact reason.
And Commissioner Don Garber, who is preparing to retire, at the end of this year or sometime in 2027, didn't do a full-on news conference at the All-Star game in Charlotte, North Carolina. He did a few interviews with some reporters, but didn't answer all the questions that people would have had, especially about the Whitecaps situation and in this post-World Cup era. Speaking of the World Cup, will it return to North America in 2038 when North America should be eligible based on the rotation? And if it does return in 2038, will it be across North America, similar to what we saw here in 2026 with the Canada and Mexico as junior partners of the United States? Or could it be a U.S.-only tournament in 2038 if it returns then?
Yeah, so let's think about this. So first of all, FIFA's always had what they call the rotational concept, right? And that means that they always want to move it from continent to continent. So they don't want it in the same continent twice in a row. And so basically what that means is, and they actually don't want it, they don't want it even every other time either. So if you've had it in Europe, it's got to go somewhere else and somewhere else before it comes back. So basically, you got to wait basically 12 years. But here's the weird kind of goofy stuff is that we've had it here in North America now. So in what's called CONCACAF, I'm sure your listeners know. So we have a CONCACAF here. Next year, it's going to both Africa and Europe. But it's also going to South America because they're doing three games right at the beginning of the tournament in honor of the 100th anniversary of the first World Cup back in 1930, which was in Uruguay. So they're going to do three games in South America. So South America theoretically is out for another two tournaments. It's going to Europe and Africa because it's going to be in Spain, Portugal, and Morocco. So Europe is out and Africa's out. Asia will be out because it's going to go to Saudi Arabia in 2024, and North America is, of course, out in 2034, which means that if you're actually using the rules that they've set up, in 2038, the only two confederations that are eligible are Oceania and North America again, CONCACAF. Well, here's the... The last complication here is Australia, which historically has been the big country in Oceania, about 15 years ago left Oceania and became part of Asia. Not on the globe officially, right? But in terms of soccer, Australia is part of Asia, which means that New Zealand and I guess Vanuatu, right, and Solomon Islands and a couple of these are the only countries in there. And you're not going to do a World Cup in New Zealand. New Zealand doesn't want that, and the rest of the world doesn't want that either. So that means North America really, by the rules officially, is the only place it can go. And again, it's not going to go to St. Kitts and Nevis. It's not going to go to Cuba or Haiti. Maybe we see an extended, Central American Mexican, but I can't imagine that necessarily. And again, they just made so much money in the United States, again, because the U.S. and, of course, Canada as well, not only has just gigantic stadiums, huge amounts of money, people who really like these big events, but we also have got these gigantic pockets of expatriates from all over the world. You know, there's nowhere else in the world that has 10,000 folks from Curacao living right in your country that can show up for the game. You know, I can't tell you how many Cape Verdeans I know who went to games. There's more Cape Verdeans probably living in the United States than in Cape Verde. So, you know, United States is just ideal for these international tournaments in all sorts of ways. And so I think it's pretty likely. As for Canada, This, you know, adding Canada and Mexico was done for political reasons this last time to kind of smooth over the rest of the folks around here. But quite honestly, and again, no insult to, you know, your Canadian audience, because, you know, I love you guys. But the you know, they were added along, right, to, you know, it was always an American tournament where they said, hey, you can come and be part of this. I suspect if we still have Trump in 2038, first of all, I'm emigrating to Canada if that happens. But if by 2038 we had a person like Trump, almost certainly this would be a U.S. only, that, you know, that type of politician wouldn't be in the mood to share the spotlight with either our northern or our southern neighbors. But quite honestly, this tournament went great. It was, there were very few problems with people getting across borders. Canada had good facilities, much more expensive hosting it in Canada, right, than the U.S. because you don't have NFL stadiums there, right? I think that, you know, just doing a repeat in 2038 would be pretty great for all of the countries involved. And there'll be up to 64 teams by then probably as well. Mm-hmm. Which means, you know, room for another four host cities, right? If we just did that in the United States, it'd be getting pretty crowded in the United States, even with all the NFL cities that are available.
As the soccer world turns and money makes the soccer world go round, thanks again for joining me on the podcast, Professor Victor Matheson, sports economist with the College of Holy Cross in Western Massachusetts. Thanks again.
Again, thanks for having me. And again, best of luck to your Whitecap fans. I hope you get to be Whitecap fans for a long time running here.
That's it for the Breaker.News podcast. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Bookmark thebreaker.news and thebreaker.ca. Follow on social media. We're on X, Threads, and Blue Sky. Follow the YouTube channel for The Breaker videos. And sign up for the free email newsletter, bobmackin.substack.com. Become a paid subscriber. Get early access to podcasts. Thanks again, and until next week.